Ben suggested that we dedicate these years for tonight again, in addition to helping everybody to Terrell and elsewhere in Clifforts, who are suffering from the economic situation today. We should also dedicate this year tonight to the memory of the 6 million from the Shoah, being that tonight and tomorrow is Yom HaShoah in Israel. So we should have in mind Ilan Shmuel also. And as we'll see, this article from Avichai Wasserman is actually a very thick article for the memory of the Holocaust, being that what he wrote this about was actually partially, at least the very, very beginning of the story, unfortunately, of the destruction of Jewry in Germany. And Rechanan himself, of course, as many of you may know, Rechanan himself was killed by the Nazis in 1941, I think it was, 1941, something like that. He was led to the massacred along with all the other students in his yeshiva. So Rechanan himself died al Kiddush Hashem. So thank you to everybody who helped put this together, to Yitzinker, who was the initial force behind thinking of this idea for this type of shiur, and to Ben Lazarus and to Phil Americus and to everybody else, Yasher Kof, everybody, and Yitz Hashem. Hopefully we should be successful in our own learning for the halachos having to do with the workplace, as well as for a recovery and a salvation, at least a partial salvation for the Jews and for everybody else in the world who's suffering from today's times.
Now that you mentioned my name, so I figured the shiur came about. Why? Because one time I had chus of driving the Rav to Yerushalayim, and I was talking to him and going through different kind of my own personal economic crisis, let's say. Yeah, I said to him, you know, what did they say during the Great Depression? Like what were the Rebbeim telling us? You know, because I haven't heard anything here now what people are talking about. Maybe there are in the States or in other places, but you know, I haven't heard anything. And this is where he brought up what Rav Wasserman said, and that's really been the springboard to, you know, this year. So hopefully it will be as successful for going on. So.
Just to add to that, so of course everybody knows that whenever you have a Rebbe, so your Rebbe remains a Rebbe throughout your life. And even after you are in contact with him, close contact with him, you know, for a little while later, even if you see him for just a couple minutes, or you speak to him, or you hear a shiur from him, just one couple minutes, 1 hour, whatever it is, you get so much from that hour that carries over, you know, to your life for a long time afterwards. So one of my rabbinim talking in the Jewish University in YU, Mordechai Willig, who many of you have heard of, many of you have heard shiur from. So, Rabbi Willig was my Rosh Kol in the Kol Elyon in YU, my Rebbe, you know, a little bit before that as well. So just this year, he comes to Israel, obviously, every year to speak to the Green Yeshivot, and he gave a shiur this year that I was privileged to be at in the Vaseret. The shiur, of course, was about what they were learning. It was about Masechus Kiddushin. But one of the questions in the question and answer period afterwards was about what the Jewish response should be to the economic crisis today. In 5 minutes, basically, Rabbi Willig went through a couple of main points from this piece of Rabbi Chanawah, which I had not been familiar with. And in those 5 minutes, that, as you can see, basically was the impetus for this whole thing, because that's how I was able to answer this question correctly, and that's what led to the idea of doing this whole thing. So I have not had a chance to speak to Rabbi Willig since then, but just be aware that just in just 5 minutes from, you know, somebody like that, a former Rebbe, it's amazing how much can come with that. So I have to thank Rabbi Willig as well. For this these Mara Mark and everything that this has led to. And as you'll see over the next couple of weeks, God willing, I'll be quoting Rabbi Willig frequently, because Baruch Hashem, he has a number of shiurim on the business ethics topics that are we can find on yutorah.org, and a number of the points as we go through that will be discussed probably will be partially based on some of his opinions, which of course I'll mention. Okay, so what we're going to do, this is again a piece from Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. He wrote a sefer called Kovetz Ma'amarim, which is essentially not his Torah Chidushim. He's got a separate sefer on his Torah Chidushim, known as the Kovetz Shiurim. This sefer is essentially his comments on current events. That's basically what it is. Every piece in this sefer is all about his hashkafa, the hashkafa of the Torah, to different events and different issues that come up in the world. And this, of course, is the greatness of somebody like a Gadol like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, or even of the Torah itself, that when you have a crisis or things that happen, you can always look to the Torah for guidance and how to deal with issues and problems that comes up. So that's why this is obviously going to be very different than the other shiurim that we'll be having over the next couple of weeks, God willing. This is really more of a hashkafa shiur, but to see what the hashkafa satorah, at least one perspective of the hashkafa satorah, is about this type of issue from somebody like Rabbi Chanan. So what we're going to do is we're going to start the piece here on page Kufnan from the beginning. We'll go through the first two pages or so pretty much straight. And after that, we'll see how much time we have, and we'll skip around a little bit. Again, the main points for our purposes, are we're going to see is right in the middle of the piece. But I think it's worthwhile to read the beginning of the piece as well as some of the parts afterwards, because again, it gives you a sense of the way that somebody like Rav Elchanan deals with an overall situation, part of which is relevant to us, part of which is not. But at least hopefully it will continue to not be relevant to us. We'll see what we mean in a few minutes.
Can we actually split some of those source sheets?
Sure.
Sure.
I apologize.
I thought you were talking about the cake. I got nervous.
I apologize. We did underestimate the crowd, and there was too many pages this time. Hopefully in the future we'll have less pages of source sheets and more copies, God willing. So that's basically what we'll do here. Again, you'll see that the whole piece is not entirely relevant to us, but it's worthwhile to see that the way that Rav Elchanan deals with certain situations. The piece was written, as you see here, in Tuf Reish Sadi Ba, which is, I believe, 1936. Okay, the immediate happenings that were taking place at this time, as he writes here on the top in parentheses, the piece is called Das Torah. Okay, as you can see on the top, he says Nichtav L'Ragla Gzeira Sashchita Mipolin Tuf Reish Sadi Ba. It was written right after the decree against doing kosher shchita in many places in Europe in approximately 1936. But this is his response to the Gzeira of shchita, but really to everything that's happening in Nazi Germany in this time period in general, which again includes a bit of a piece on the Great Depression and the economic situation as well. Okay, let's begin here. Section powers. Anybody who has a source sheet, hopefully you can somewhat follow along. Everybody else, hopefully you can keep as close attention as possible, and it'll make it pretty easy to understand. Okay, so Rav Elchanan says, "Benoeg Shaba Olam," something that happens in the world. "Shah Shemat Sabo Shel Ben Adam Mishagshay," when at a time when a person's condition or status is Mishagshay, which seems to mean
when they translate live long and prosper.
That's what they say, really? Mishagshay? Interesting. Okay, I did not know that. Thank you.
Anybody happens to read the subtitles this morning.
So interesting. Look at that. I just figured it out from the context. I didn't know what the word meant, but Baruch Hashem, we're here. Even help us out here. Okay. Guys, you also know, in modern Hebrew, you know, they always take a lot of words from other words that have ancient meanings or whatever. I don't know if Rav Elchanan got this from the modern Hebrew or it came out. I don't think it's an ancient Hebrew word, but okay, whatever it is. So at a time when a person is prosperous, what does he say? Zokei tules ha-siba l'zakoso. Basically, chachmaso hi sha'avgalo marazo kochav otzav yado o afilu b'tikasi u b'yosher l'vavi. Basically, a person says, it's all me. Who is the person who is responsible for what's happening to me, the fact that I am getting wealthy, that I'm doing well? It's me. It's my wisdom. It's my power, my strength. It's that I've done b'tikasi u b'yosher l'vavi, my righteousness and that which is straight in my heart. That's what a person generally says if they're doing well. But during a time when a person is not doing so, when he's shari bitzara, he's in distress. So then whose fault is it? Nah, it's not my fault, of course. If I'm in trouble, it's his, not my, it's his fault over there. Apologize, you gotta be careful when you finger point. So that's what Rav Elchanan says. Ulam mishash adam shari bitzara, harayu tolas hasiba v'ploni o almoni. He always hangs the fault, whose fault is it? It's somebody else's fault. Bechulam prat me'atzmo, everybody else except for himself. Aval atas ha-Torah hi nefeches legamrei, but the wisdom and the advice of the Torah is exactly the opposite of this. Bishah she'tov l'adam, when a person is doing well, al yagid kochiv yatzam yadi, don't say that it's my own doing, don't say that it's my own deeds that have caused me to be prosperous. Lo b'tikascha of yosher lavcha, to quote from a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim. It's not your righteousness, it's not that which you feel in the straightness in your heart. It's not that which you have done, which has allowed you to be prosperous. No. Mishasha shvatim hayushruim b'tzara, tekaf chipsu umatzu es hasiba harishon. And now he's going to the other side. What happens if something is going wrong? Is it somebody else's fault? No. It's your fault. He says, when the 12 tribes were in distress, immediately they investigated chipsu umatzu es hasiba harishon, and they found the first thing that they found, that they investigated, what they found was ma'asa Hashem lanu. Basically what they say is, what did Hashem do for us? Siwas acheros lo chipsu b'chal, they didn't even look or search for any other reasons. B'mi ha'ashma, whose fault is it? Aval ashemim anachnu, it's our fault. Anybody know what he's talking about here? There's 12 shvatim aval ashemim anachnu, anybody know?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yosef. Excellent. Very good. Okay. The tough one. Yeshua. Rav Elchanan here is referring to Yosef and his 10 brothers who sold him into slavery. So what happens? So they, of course, forget about Yosef. There's a famine in Eretz Yisrael many, many years later. They go down to Egypt, and then with the ruler, who they didn't realize was Yosef, the ruler asks them, who are you? Where are you from? Where, what are you doing here? We hear that you have another, they say that they have another brother who's not here now. So he says, Yosef says to them, make sure to bring down your other brother, Benjamin. He didn't know his name, but that's basically what he was asking. And the brothers, of course, are very distressed because they know that Yaakov does not want to part with Benjamin after losing Yosef as well. So what do they say? The first thing they say is, Aval Ashemim Anachnu. They say that we are the ones who are at fault. It's our fault. And what do they say? What's the next part of the puzzle? Anybody remember? I remember. What do we do wrong? Asher Ra'il Tzaras Nafsho. We saw Yosef pleading with us not to sell him in pit, and we did so anyway. They didn't have to search very far. They knew already to begin with that it was their own fault, that that's what was causing them to be in this distress. That's Ma'asa Hashem Lanu. What have they done? Ma'azo Sasal Kim Lanu. What has Hashem done to us? It's our fault. That's the Hashkava Satorah, says Rabbi Chanan. We have to look no further than our own selves when something is going wrong. Why do they have this approach? Why do they assume that it was their fault? Because that's the truth. Ish Eno Achraib Adi Surav Shal Adam Prat Le'atma. A person is not responsible for his suffering except for himself. We can always look to a person themselves to understand why they're suffering. This is true on an individual level as well as on a communal level. The Ramban says in Parshas Bo, that a person doesn't have a portion of Torah Hashem until he believes that everything that happens to us, even things that are mikra, that are happenstance, that everything is really a miracle. There's no regular nature and regular method of the world, both in private or in public. Right? What does that mean? Everything comes from Hashem. Even if it looks like it's natural, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person does the mitzvot, then Hashem will give him his reward. And if he violates the mitzvot, then Hashem will set aside, cut his punishment for him. Everything is based on the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This principle, this basic yesod, is defined by the pasuk that says b'chol haaretz mishpatav, that all over the land, all over the world, is Hashem's mishpat, Hashem's judgment. B'chol haaretz mishpatav, the entire world, lo yotzei min haklal, with no exceptions. Kol mi she'eino ma'amid b'yesod ha'yesod ha'ela, eino b'chlal yehudi. Anybody that does not agree and believe in this type of principle is not included in being Jewish. Now, of course, we're not going to go into this now. This is not really today's topic, but obviously it's not always so simple to try to understand exactly why something is going wrong for you. Again, we'll see here, Bukhan has an approach to things that are happening, and sometimes we can identify certain aspects to work on, but of course you can't always say that we know exactly why something has happened. And also, of course, we have Gemaras that do discuss what we call Yisurim Shalahava, that there are types of suffering which are Hashem loves you and he wants to make you closer to him. Again, that's not our discussion for now. That's in a whole other discussion, which we won't have now. The point that we'll get out of Rabbi Chanan now is that regardless of how exactly you view suffering in terms of your fault or other people's fault, the point is that you can always look inside yourself and improve on specific things when something is going wrong in your life. That's really the main stone that we're going to take out of this. Again, we don't know always why everything happens, but certainly if you have a certain type of difficulty, you can often take the type of difficulty, as Rabbi Chanan will say, and use that as an impetus to change certain parts or certain things in your life. Let's see how Rabbi Chanan understands this. Amam v'usasim, we're in section B now. Amam v'usasim mishpatei Hashem. What are the judgments of Hashem based on? Machusa derekia ke'e machusa de'ara. So he says that the kingdom above in heaven is similar to that on the earth. Kol shofei ha'motzi psak din, any judge who gives a verdict, he bases it on a clause or on one of the conditions in the Book of Judgments. So the Book of Judgments up in heaven is the Torah, of course, which includes rules and halachos, both bein adam l'chaveiro as well as bein adam l'makom. From here we see that everything that happens in the world is based on the judgments and the rules of the Torah. And just like we have to delve into and understand the Torah itself, so too we have to delve into and understand the rules of the Torah as they concern what happens in the world, i.e. current events and history. Yesh ladas ki ba'oros ha'olam heim shalshelas achas arucha, that the events in the world are really one long chain. V'chol ma'ashakari eloi l'chulia achas b'zoch ha'sharsheres ha'arucha, and anything that happens at any given time is only one link in that long chain. Hamovila askul matras sofis shalkul b'nyan ha'olam, which basically moves and leads the entire chain of history to one goal of building the world. Hakol mesukam l'suda, everything is being prepared for the su'uda, which is the meal, which is again either times of Mashiach or Olam Haba, whatever it is. It's all leading towards one final goal. So how do we understand any event that takes place in the world? What do we do to look at that event with Torah glasses, we'll call them? You have to understand and give a background, a perspective, from the beginning to the end. How does this fit with other types of events that are similar in category? He explains. Nais Purim l'mashal. Well, let's say take the miracle of Purim, who mishula mikala chalakim is really is combined together from a few different parts. Kasher is spoken in mechulecha biofen nifra. If you look at every section, every part of the miracle, every, let's say, chapter in the Megillah separately, ain rav shum de rav yuchan. There's nothing that stands out. Right? You look at chapter one. You look at the death of Vashti. Right? Okay, the king put her to death. You look at the fact that the king Achashverosh made Haman Queen Esther, the queen after that. Okay, that's a nice thing. She's Jewish. Okay, you know, there have been Jews that have been in high positions before. Nothing special about that. Eventually, Haman is going to destroy the Jews, etc., etc. Every step along the way, you don't look at the Megillah and say, "Oh, wow, this is Hashem's hand." But when you look at the whole story from beginning to end, you realize that something is happening here. That the whole thing is part of a divine master plan. Only when you look at the entire perspective of everything together, when you combine all the different parts together, you're able to see the sof hamasa, meaning what happens at the end, was already the machshava tchila, was already in mind, in Hashem's mind, at the beginning. Meaning the whole thing was planned out, even if you didn't realize it. So in order to understand properly everything that happens in the world and have this perspective, so you have to know Hashem's mind. Of course, today we can't do it. We can't understand exactly why Hashem does every single thing along the way from beginning to end. However, he says, you can look at the Torah to find these kinds of things, and the God of love kol sasu, which reveals to us everything which is hidden. You can find in the Torah the hinge which everything that happens in the world, that Hashem does in the world, sort of hinges on, turns upon. That is going to be the key to understanding things that happen in the world. Gimel. This idea that I'm saying here, he says, is taken from Pesukim, it's straight from the Torah. Look at, remember the days of old. Binu, think about, analyze the Shnos Dor V'Dor, the previous years or generations. What does that mean? This, of course, is one of the sources that we have for studying history. If you didn't realize this, studying history is actually an important Torah value, and the Rishonim and Posim talk about this. It's important to study history. Why is that? So he tells you why. It's not just because history is a secular subject that you have to learn in school and you have some sort of test on afterwards. He says there's two reasons why. Shnei Inyanim. Number one, Yesh Lizkor Ramah Misrachish Bo'olam. You have to remember what happened in the world, right? Why? Because Ma'aseh Avot Simam L'Banim. Because things that happened in the past may be likely to occur once again later. But that, it's not only enough to know what has happened in the world, Yesh L'Havim. You have to understand. You can't just take any event and memorize, okay, there was such a thing as 100 Years War. There was such a thing as the Balfour Declaration. You have to understand the Torah perspective behind it, where everything is going. And that's probably even the more important point. He says, don't rely on your own understanding. Don't just say, well, I think that the reason why this happens in history is because X, Y, and Z. No, you can't do that. You can't base your understanding on your own limited intelligence. That's the next pasuk in Parshas Hazino. That's right after Zechoriah Mos Olam. It says, ask your father, he will tell you. Your elders, they will tell to you. They will tell you exactly what's going on. The Kabbalah's Chazal Sinai, from the tradition that Chazal got from Har Sinai. Hakadoshim Shabo B'Sod Hashem. The holy ones that came with the Sod Hashem, with the secrets of Hashem. The Divrayim Chapesis HaHezber L'Shnos Dor V'Dor. Only in their words can you search for the explanations for that which happens throughout history. Yidiyah Achaz Gimulanu V'Torah Shemichtav. The Torah tells us one piece of information, which is again the next pasuk in Parshas Hazir. Panchil El Yom Goyim. when Hashem, the Elyon, the upper one, Hanchel, inherits Goyim, nations, Tabi B'chol Dor, that happens every generation, Hashem leads things to happen in the world, Ba'afridu B'nei Adam, when he separates different people in different ways, Yatsev, he sets up, or literally he stands up, Tamim, always, Givulos, Amim, L'Mispar B'nei Yisrael, he stands up or he sets up the Givulos, the borders of the different nations, L'Mispar B'nei Yisrael, for the number of, for the people, the Jewish people. What does that mean? Kol ha'ashkacha yesh l'matara achas b'nei Yisrael. Every part of Hashem's hashkacha of what happens in the world all has one goal, and that's the Jewish people. Kol ha'shar enon ela emtsoim matara sofezun. Everything else is only a means to this end. V'chol kach lama, so why is it? Why is that so important? I mean, why does it have to make all sorts of events in the world only for the purpose of the b'nei Yisrael? Because ki chelak Hashem amo Yaakov chevel nachlaso. Because Hashem's portion is with his people, Yaakov chevel nachlaso, the rope of his inheritance. Meaning Hashem cares specifically about us. We are special. Again, sometimes being special is good, sometimes being special is not so good. But the point is, once we have a special connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem makes a lot of things happen in the world specifically so that we should take notice, that we should understand. We understand that most people in the world are not necessarily going to realize why things are happening to them. They don't take this perspective. They just look at the easiest way out. How do I get out? How do I get another job? How do I make the stock market start again? How much money can I pour into the, you know, from the U.S. government, pour into the banks to make sure that they won't collapse? But that's not the Torah way. The Torah way is that we have to realize that everything that's happening is a message from Hashem for us as well. The two low and nothing more. He says this is obvious in his eyes at least. If we remember that the whole purpose of creation was to receive the Torah. In Bo Brisi, HaTorah, Yomun V'layla Chukos Shemayim Arz Lo Samdi. This is a pasuk in Mach, that Hashem says that if my covenant, which is the Torah, would not be observed by the Jewish people, day and night, Chukos Shemayim Arz Lo Samdi. And basically it's as if I have not created the heavens and the earth. There is no point to the rest of creation if the Jewish people are not observing the Torah. Bereshis B'Shvil HaTorah Shenikras Reishis. As the Torah says, Bereshis B'Ra Elokim, and Rashi says, Bereshis, means not only in the beginning, it means Bishvil Reishis, because of Reishis, and the Torah is called Reishis. Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis, and based for the Jewish people that are called Reishis. Meaning that the whole purpose of creation is all for us, it's all for the Jewish people, and it's all for the Torah. Okay, we're going to skip the next section right now. Dala, I'll just summarize for you what he says here. Basically what he's saying here is that it's not so crazy that the entire world, things that happen everywhere, is only for the purpose of the Jewish people, because we know in general that the Jewish people, even though the Jewish people are the smallest nation, Hashem still says in the Torah that we are the chosen people, which again is sometimes good, and sometimes is more difficult, is challenging. But the point is that there's always a structure in the world that the smallest group of people are often the most important. And he quotes here basically, people, the live things in the world are much less in proportion than the non-living things, trees and dust and earth is much greater. In terms of those that are alive, so again, the chosen nation, the Jewish people, is much smaller in number than everybody else. Okay, we continue with that. Let's get to section H, okay, page Kufman there. Now, he says, "B'yachas l'moros ha'yehudim ha'miyuchadim." What about the things that happen specifically to the Jews, not to the rest of the world in general, but specifically to the Jews? "Sakana maruba tzfuya lanu." He said, "There's a great danger which awaits us." In nishkach yad Hashem ha'yisobanu. We forget that Hashem, it's Yad Hashem. It's not just us, it's the Yad Hashem. The Torah says, if you walk with me, b'keri. What does b'keri mean? This is what Pasuk in the Tochach on Parshas B'chul Kosai. Shetoru mikrahu. You say, everything is just happenstance. It just happened to be this way. I just happened to lose my job. I just happened to gain something tremendous, right? If it's about mikra, if it's about chance, then halachti machem achamaz keri. I, Hashem says, I will walk with you as well with the anger of carry of happenstance. I will add to your suffering 7 times the amount that you sinned. And just like that, when there's a fire, when there's no possibility of destroying, of putting out the fire completely, at least we try to make sure that it doesn't spread any further. So too, we should also be concerned that we should never get to the point of Yasati, that Hashem punishes us for more than the amount that we sinned. That again will happen if we take everything, look everything and see it as chance. No. And Hashem will treat us with chance as well and say, okay, the non-Jews don't like us, we'll get destroyed. So he says basically here, we want to make sure that we do not get to that point. What is the method of getting to this? How do we do this? You have to understand that it's not chance. El yada shem kai sabar. Okay. Vav. Laksam yada shem kai flying the whole chatoset. This is a pasuk we shy that Hashem, that the Jewish people have taken flat or the beating double the amount that they have sinned. Hapasuk has a zakut lasbar. He says this has to be explained. He says, usually we know that that generally the punishment is less severe than the sin was. The act v'eschashcha lamata. What is it? I forgot how this is pronounced here. Was it chasachta or chaschas lamata mi'avoneinu? Basically, that you chasachta lamata mi'avoneinu. You have basically taken away from us something from our sin. You punish us less than we have sinned. V'inei kana rohedach. But then in this pasuk it says that we have gotten punished more than we've sinned. How could that be? Ulam Nishal Das says, you have to know, Kol Eimas Hashem Yisbarach Manishes Yisrael. Any time that Hashem punishes us, Ritzono Hu Shelo Yisbali Le'inei HaGoyim. Hashem's will is that this shouldn't be obvious to the rest of the nations. Ki B'nei Yisrael and Hashem, the Jewish people are being punished. And again, this obviously has to be taken in perspective. This is not always the case. You can find many times that it's very obvious to the Jewish nations that, to the non-Jews, that the Jews are getting punished. And the Holocaust is one very big example, unfortunately. But what he's saying here is that at least at the beginning of these kinds of events, that it begins that Hashem wants, in general, he wants the Jews to take note without everybody else realizing that Hashem is trying to punish us. Basically, Hashem is saying that I've cut off other nations and caused their areas to be destroyed. I've destroyed their streets, and Hashem says, I want you, the Jewish people, to see what I have done, to take Musar, to understand what I have done, take it to heart. Sometimes the bad events that are taking place that the Jews are supposed to notice are sometimes sort of hidden away within a larger phenomenon. This is the first line that has to do with our situation specifically. The time when there may be a specific decree on Jews that their parnasa, that their means of supporting themselves, has been limited by a divine decree. So what happens? The first thing that happens is not that, oh, all the Jews lose their jobs. No, this chalel hashper olami. There's what we would call a Great Depression. And that, of course, is very clearly referring to the 1929 Great Depression. That's what Rav Chaim is referring to here. However, his point is that when these types of things begin on a global level, we have to take note. If we would understand that from heaven Hashem is trying to point us in the right direction to realize that we have to think about our own deeds, this would have been enough for us. We wouldn't have needed any other punishments. But if we say, oh, it's just chance that everybody lost their jobs, it's just chance that the stock market crashes or something else happens in the world, then eventually, God forbid, there may be specifically Jewish-oriented tragedies and distress and difficulties. Without any way of making any mistake, it will be very obvious that the second stage, the second level of the punishment is specifically at the Jews. That if we don't take note of the original, the initial happenings in the rest of the world. That at that point, the second step, when it's punishment specifically for the Jews, it'll be clear to everybody that we are the address. So it seems from here that the Jews actually suffered twice. From the general problems that afflict the rest of the world. And from specifically Jewish calamities and punishments. In Anamagim Osahakar, we're in Zion now. If we get to this appreciation and understanding and recognition, it will be clear to us that nobody else is at fault for our problems, our troubles. Just as Yosef's brothers said about themselves, it's our fault. This is its own type of understanding, that it's all us. It's only us. Of course, the people that cause us to suffer are not tzaddikim. Nobody ever claimed that the Egyptians in Mitzrayim were tzaddikim. No. But the point is, but according to Rambam, he says that people that are not good people, they're the ones that cause us to suffer so that Hashem can punish them for their being bad, and also punish us at the same time for things that we have done wrong. And Rishon discussed this in terms of the midstream, famous machlokas of the Rishon, around the Ravim and others, about how the Egyptians were responsible in this context. But basically, at least according to one of their approaches, it's what Rav Chanan is saying here, that they're responsible for their actions, but at the same time, Hashem uses them as messenger to oppress us. Al-Kach Yago Cheshbon Nifra. That's basically, we have our own Cheshbon, a separate Cheshbon for us. The God is like, Hashem Yavon Utanu, but it's true that Hashem says, I will judge a nation that has oppressed you as well. Since that's not our point now, we don't care what happens to them afterwards. We want to know what's happening to us. We have to look for etzos for advice for ourselves. Since we know who is afflicting us, it's Hashem. We have to understand why it's happening. Why is Hashem doing this to us? Again, this is classic Torah Hashkafa that we try, and not always successfully, but we always try to understand what might be behind things that are going wrong in our lives, and what can we improve on? The Adata Kira, Asher Yasar Ish Espeno Hashem Elokein Hashem Yasreka, Hashem Elokein Yasreka. It's a pasuk in Devarim. Says you should know that just like a man afflicts his son when his son has done something wrong, he has to punish him sometimes. So too, Hashem has to punish you and afflict you sometimes as well. Kasher Alav Yasir Espeno. When a person punishes his son, Ina Matrali is not Kembo. His point is not to take revenge on his son, hopefully. Elo Lasakno, to make his son better. He wants to improve his son. So of course, if the father decides that he wants to punish his son, so he turns off the light and he brings him outside and he throws a rock in his face. Okay, so if the son doesn't know where the rock came from, of course that's not going to help at all. The child has to know who threw the rock and why he threw it. Otherwise, the punishment serves no purpose. He says, as long as we have prophets in the Jewish people, they would tell us, they would prophesy to us what we've been doing wrong. That based on whatever sins we've been doing, that's why calamities and punishments have befallen us. Today, unfortunately, we have no Nevi'im anymore. How are we going to know when we're getting struck from heaven? How are we going to know for which, whatever sin? How are we going to know what the sin is that we have committed? There is a rule in Hashkachas Hashem that is mita k'neged mita, that Hashem punishes us in the way that we have sinned. Zelu mazeh, this tit for tat. But onesh nikar tamid gamachet, from the punishment that we're getting, you can also figure out, recognize what the sin is. Kol zanem rabbi shemrot liros. This is true for anybody who wants to see. Kol mesar mohavim able takana. Of course, if you refuse to see the light, if you refuse to see what it is, then of course you have no takana. There's nothing we can do for you. Kol rotz litos yavobiyim. Anybody who wants to attach other reasons for what's happening, of course, can do so. However, he says, Chavon is bonin v'malkim osadu v'achakach nucha lohavim v'ad malakim. Rav Chanan says, let's take a look at what's happening today in his time, in the 1930s. What are they punishing us with? And then we can understand what we have done wrong. Again, of course, it takes somebody like Rav Chanan to understand sometimes why we're getting punished. We can't always know exactly why things happen, but again, you can often identify different connections between punishment and certain sins that may have taken place. Okay. Tet. So Rav Chanan identifies in his time there were three methods, three ways that Jews were subjected to a persecution. Bamuvan kalkali, in the economic field, gufani and ruchani, physically and ruchani and spiritually. What is spiritually? It's over gzeros al hadas, religious decrees, religious persecution. Yesh Sefer Anshim, he says that there's an order to the punishments. Reish is called mechina kalkalit. Initially, the first thing that we are punished with is from the financial aspect. Kachi midas hashkafa. This is the way that Hashem works. Ein ba'al racham pogeb b'nefashos tzchila. Hashem, who is merciful, does not start out by punishing people directly, physically or spiritually. First, he takes away their money. And the Gemara discusses this in other places as well. This is a known idea that Hashem starts with your property, and then afterwards, if you don't pay attention, then he gets to you. But if you don't take note, if you don't take stock of the financial disasters, then afterwards come the physical decrees. Even the physical persecutions begin very lightly. The holocaust machners, and unfortunately they get worse and more severe. Until it gets to the point, God forbid, that everything is hefker, and basically any non-Jew can do whatever he wants to any Jew. He can knock him over, he can hit him, he can shoot him, and nobody says a word. So he starts from the economic perspective. So he says that they've done two things to us in his time. On one hand, they have prevented us from obtaining a proper parnasa. So Smith is called Makaras Hareba. They have sealed off any possible way of making a profit. How do they do that? Boycotts. They say no German is allowed to buy from any Jewish store. On the other hand, they loot Kristallnacht. They steal everything that we already had. What comes next? The Torah says about the Egyptians that the Egyptians appointed taskmasters in order to oppress the Jewish people. So, sorry for the back and forth between the modern Hebrew and Haber Ashkenazis. He says that Sarim Yusim, taskmasters is natural, that's normal. There are taskmasters of some sort in every country. The difference was that in Egypt, the point of the, sorry, not taskmasters, Sarim Yusim is the tax collectors. That's what I meant to say. The difference is that in Egypt, they were not collecting tax for the good of the country. So their whole purpose was to oppress the Jewish people. The tax collectors were not appointed for everybody in the population. They were specifically for Allah. I assume Allah. On it, who's that? That's the Jewish people. Everything that happened in Egypt is also happening today. What he calls the Ikhlas of Mashiach, the period preceding Yavos Mashiach. This is what the Torah says in the Tochacha, that I will break for you the staff of bread. And basically, that's the prophecy that the Jews will suffer from an economic downturn. So he says that's what's happening in his time, in the 1930s. That was the first step. This is the key part for us right now. This is really the key for our shiur. Again, we're putting it in a larger context here, but for us, Yud here is really the key. Ma'i Sibas Alish, what is the reason why this is happening? Somebody who creates wealth, but not through mishpat, not in a proper, justified manner. Half of his days, after half of his days, the wealth will leave him. Osha osha yazov is baal. Look, either what that means is that the wealth will leave the owner. Baal yazov es osha, or the owner will leave his wealth. One way or the other, we're going to have to separate the person from his money. The lobe mishpat, what does it mean that he obtains his wealth from the lobe mishpat? Mashma lobe mishpatei Torah. It means not through the methods, the rules of the Torah. It means that you accumulated your wealth, you accrued your wealth in ways which violate certain halachos in the Torah. Again, this is exactly our point right here. Stealing, ribis interest, ona, charging too much money when you're not supposed to. Hasagas kavul, opening, taking over your friend's property or opening up businesses where there's only one business, there's not enough room for a second one, you open a second one anyway. These are all aspects of halacha that deal with a person in the workplace, a person in business. So what Muhammad is saying here is essentially our point. This is basically what we're trying to get out of this. That when we have economic downturns, economic problems, where do we look? We look at our things that we have done wrong in the world of business, in the halachos related to the other machabeira as it deals with business and selling and things like that. In addition to that, also money that's been made through violating Shabbos or Yom Tov, Biglal Bittul Torah, or money that has been accumulated through Bittul Torah. You spent, you're working at night until 12 o'clock at night before coming home from the office, and you had no time to learn Torah for a month. How could that be, right? Yeah, obviously you have to work, you have to make a living, but you have to find sometimes during the day or during the week, whatever it is, you have to find time to be koveh into the Torah, to learn Torah as well. Kesef kazeh min ha-chriach shel yakala. The Muhammad says money that's earned in this way has to be, it must be, that it's going to be lost. The Olam Malamizah, more than that, afilu b'rov kesef kosher sham. Even if some of the money that you got is through honest means, ba'zeh v'ibein ezeh, money that you obtained through dishonest means will come and actually cause the rest of your money to be lost as well. The lobe mishpat, when we say the lobe mishpat, if you obtain your money not through the proper means, that means also if you have not been donating money to the proper causes, to tzedakah, gvilas chasadim, achzakas haTorah, hakesef she'adam kazeh nachzik biyadohu v'lo rak mishpat. meaning that your money that you get, you also have to donate to tzedakah. You can't just sit there and keep your money and keep making more and more money. You have to realize that there are mitzvahs in the Torah that'll require you to give up a little bit of your money. So he says, Kashem od Yud Aleph. It's very difficult. Basically, at this time, it's very difficult in a time when everybody's suffering to essentially to pour salt on your wounds. It makes things worse. How can you do that? But he says, I have to explain what the reason is why this is happening to us. Sometimes you have to open up the wound to see what's inside. If there's something, an infection, or something that's penetrated your body, you have to know what's there, open it up in order to be able to fix it. Right? We say, tzadikim anachnu v'lo chatanu, that we are tzadikim and we have not sinned. We say, of course, that you cannot say that. That's what we say. No. Aval anachnu v'lo chatanu, we have sinned. If you try to cheat yourself and make yourself believe that nothing is wrong, that everything you've done is absolutely proper, nothing good is going to come from that. Right? I'm going to come to you, Hashem says, and judge you over the fact that you said I haven't sinned. No. We can't do that. We have sinned, and we have to identify what the problems are. My point here is not to stick a thorn into anybody or to incite anybody or show that somebody is terrible. He says we have to establish the facts, though. We have to understand the facts of what has happened over the past couple of years and why that's happened. Okay. We're going to skip a couple sections here. Essentially what he does in the next couple sections, he describes the other parts of what was happening in his time. The fact that there was violence against the Jewish people. So he pinpoints that and he says that before that there were many Jewish factions that were fighting as well. The Haredi factions, the non-firm factions, they fought. Apparently there was potential violence between them. He says violence among Jews is inevitably at some point later going to lead to violence of non-Jews against the Jews. And again he goes through that at length. Again, very, very interesting, not exactly our point, but again, you see the way Rahman's mind is working here. He's looking at things that have happened and trying to identify causes that are similar to the punishment. Let's skip. I just want to do one interesting thing here also before we finish up this section. Let's skip to Yud Chet. It's on page Kuf Mem Zayin. This is very interesting. I find this one particularly insightful. Yud Chet. This is another one of the things that he discusses here. Gezeirat Yom Rishon. Everybody see where I am? Mm-hmm. He says there was a decree against Sunday. Today, anybody here from New Jersey besides my wife? So New Jersey today, they still have what's called the Blue Laws. Okay, anybody familiar with the Blue Laws? From I don't know where else they had it. In America, they had it once upon a time. You cannot work on Sunday. Sunday is the day of rest for the Christian religion. You're not allowed to work on Sunday. Anybody who works on Sunday, his business will be taken away or will be put in jail, whatever it is. So in Rahman's time as well, that was a problem. He says, Kol od shamar Yehudim al Shabbos, but he identifies the problem as being based on the Jewish keeping of Shabbos. As long as the Jewish people as a whole were not keeping Shabbos in the proper way, as long as they were keeping Shabbos, lo yadan al yom rishon. We never knew any problem on Sunday. Of course, you can work the rest of the week. Shesh shem tasa malacha, you work 6 days, and then the seventh day you rest. These machin of a pirtos bishmiras ha-shabbos, hayam yechobo, seinu amitas kol ha-kohos libnoa eschil ha-shabbos u ha-bid mashkichem matar azu. He says, but once there have been pirtos, right, there have been cracks, or what do you want to translate it as?
Breaches,
that's a good word, thank you. Breaches in the keeping of Shabbos by the Jewish people, that's the point that we should have gone all out to try to prevent the Chilul Shabbos and to make it such that Shabbos was kept properly again. But he says, Lo asim zos osha lagu l'mashkichim. Either we didn't do it or people made fun of those that were trying to get everybody to keep Shabbos. Had we dwell can't go in away to mashkichim and smear sing of region. What's the Mida connected Mida here? He says, if we are not going to do our job in trying to get everybody else to keep Shabbos properly, then the non-Jews are going to do it to us. They're going to make sure, they're going to take the police, make sure that we cannot work on Sunday. Very interesting. Mida connected Mida. Again, I'm not saying from this perspective that means that every single non-Jew in Israel, every single Jew in Israel is not keeping Shabbos. You have to tell them, I can't work with you, I can't do this, I can't do that. But the point is, again, obviously every situation is different. The point is that, again, not necessarily supporting your Haredi perspective of boycotting certain places. Everything has to be taken, in its time and in its context. But the point is that there is an idea that it has to pain you and you have to do something about the breach of Shmir Shabbos. It has to be something that is we feel is our responsibility. Again, our way of doing this may be that if you have workers at if you're working, and they might think you're crazy, but you invite them over. Spend a Shabbos with me. Spend some time. If it's Sukkot, whatever holiday is at the workplace, so don't just make it a secular celebration. Bring something religious to it. Bring a Torah, something to make it, something to make it a little more religious. Again, obviously, you can't give specific examples. Every case is different, but that's the idea Rabbi Chanan is getting at here. But he says, he said, the mashkichim, that the Nazis have pointed against us to not work on Sunday, nobody makes fun of anymore. Those mashkichim, unfortunately, we mourn their presence. Skip the parentheses, go down about 6-7 lines after the parentheses. Maya Totoshal Chil Shabbos, what's the consequence of Chil Shabbos? Chanuyos Yehudios Nisgaros Bemechol. The Jewish stores have been closed during the week. The amount of times that the Jewish stores have been open on Shabbos, Niftachos Chanuyos Koyim Chadosh Bemechol. New non-Jewish stores have opened up during the week to take the place of the Jewish stores. Lefnei Eser Shalvei Anafa Eitzim Bivdei Yehudim. Right, but unfortunately, after that point, so then people were working on Shabbos and Yom Tov in public in their offices with Jewish workers, etc., etc. What happened to them? They thought that the world belonged to them, and they ran the world. These are the Jews that are running businesses on Shabbos; they're not religious anymore. It's clear from what's happening now, he says, that the world does not belong to them. Sheesh Adon Olam. There is somebody, a master of the world. Sherav Kocho Mishalanu, that his power is greater than ours. Mecholam Miskarabo Achariso Marakalana. Anybody that takes on Akash Baruch Hu and makes fun, excites Akash Baruch Hu, unfortunately, will his end will be very, very bitter. Okay, so we're going to skip the next couple sections here. I'll just summarize quickly the very last part, and then I'll make one or two other points, separate points about our issue specifically. The rest of the piece here, if you want to read it inside, you can. Basically, what he does is he tries to suggest a method of how to approach these types of consequences. And again, we discussed before about the business aspect of it. Here also, he says one of the things they have to do is strengthen their Levi HaTorah. Levi HaTorah is critical for the Jewish people's survival. And he says that the Levi HaTorah and the school system and everybody being Kovei'im in the Torah must be strengthened. He says that we also have to strengthen the Torah institutions. He says to support the people, even if you can't learn so much Torah, but for you to support others that can learn Torah is also critical, says Rabbi Chanan. Okay. That's essentially most of the piece here. And again, he says that these incidents, that what happens here is not going to pass overnight. He says it's not going to just go away. These things are going to continue, unfortunately, and we don't know what Hashem has in store for us. Unfortunately, as we know already, this was just the beginning of the end for European Jewry, what Rabbi Chanan describes here. But unfortunately, things got worse, and after that, that led to the destruction of the vast majority of the Jews in Europe. Okay. I just want to make one or two other points about the business aspect of it specifically. Again, clearly we see from Rabbi Chanan that in our situation today, one of the things that we can do to try to respond to the situation is look at our observance of halakha related to business. It's very, very interesting. In Wanyu, a couple months ago, they had a yom yom for the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of Alumni of America, and Rabbinic Alumni of YU. Essentially, the point was how the rabbi has to deal with the economic crisis. So they had a number of speakers at the event. They had a few economic experts describing, just to review quickly how it had happened, what the expectations were for the future. And then they had a number of speakers who were rabbanim in the field. Rabbi Billet spoke, Rabbi Golden from Englewood, if you're familiar with these names. They spoke about some of the things that the rabbis have to be familiar with in terms of their balabatim. They see signs of anxiety. People come to them and they say, I've lost my job. How do you deal with such a person? What do you say to them? Do you make them feel better? Do you make them feel worse? Right? Whatever it is. So they have a lot of discussion about that. Of course, obviously, we have to be very, very sympathetic. This is very, very difficult, and you can't go say, ha, it's your fault because you did this and this, that's why you lost your job. No. You don't say that, obviously. Hopefully don't say that. They had mentioned one comment on the recording that I heard was that a number of Balabatim came to the rabbi and said, wow, rabbi, I envy you because your job is safe and mine is not. So of course the rabbi said, you never know, if the Balabatim are losing their jobs, who's going to pay for the rabbi's salary? So the rabbi's jobs are not so safe. But again, obviously, every rub has to be very sympathetic, and it's not something we can point fingers and this is why it happened and this is what you did wrong. At the same time, they also mentioned that, of course, you know, they were suggesting in droshas that many of the shul rabbanim should point out that maybe there are certain things they can do in the community, such as cut down on the amount of money that people spend for simchas or for kiddushim or things like that. Practical steps that they felt that some people may not take too well, but you know, maybe had to be mentioned. What's interesting is that in the whole thing, the whole recording was two parts. The whole thing they did not mention once, and I don't know why. This point of Rabbi Willits bringing in this Rabbi Chanan Wasser, maybe they were familiar with it, but this approach is really a very, I think, a very critical approach and an additional approach to everything that was mentioned there. And that's the approach that we're going to take in this set of Shiurim, that it's not enough to just try, obviously, to be, obviously, you know, we want to try to help everybody whose jobs are unstable, which I think is almost all of us here at this point. We all realize whatever our jobs are or not, everybody knows there's a chance that they might lose their jobs if they haven't already. But in addition to that, the point that we're going to take here is obviously the hashkafic point of view. Where can we look? Where can we do our own cheshbon and nefesh and see where we can improve? And the area of business and halacha is the area that is directly parallel to things that are going on in the world today. And that's where we're going to focus on. It's very important in general that we realize that the halacha, the Torah, has a place in everywhere, in all parts of one's life, in your house, in shul, and also in the workplace. And therefore, in order to realize that, you have to understand what some of the halachas are, but that really the workplace is really an opportunity. It's a responsibility and it's an opportunity. It's a responsibility to make sure that religious Jews are not seen as being, oh, that firm Jew, look what he does, he embezzles, he steals, he does this, he does that. You can't trust him, right? That's the responsibility. If that happens, and unfortunately it's happened many times, both in this country, in Israel, in America, and many other places that you see on the front cover of the New York Times, somewhere else, that Hasidic-looking Jew, he was thrown in jail because of this embezzling scandal, whatever it was. That's a very, very big responsibility. On the other hand, though, it's really a tremendous opportunity to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, for a tremendous Kiddush Hashem in the world, to show the rest of the world, both Jews and non-Jews, how wonderful our Torah is and how upright, how yashar we are when we act properly. And I'll just mention two quick examples and we'll conclude with this. It's very, very interesting. It's very interesting, Makoros, which also I have to thank Rabbi Willig for pointing out here as well. Very interesting Gemara in Ksubos, of the Hassan Rabbah and Beis. The Gemara here discusses the story of Nachdima Ben Gurion, of a famous person in Yerushalayim towards the end of the Second Temple period. And he was very, very wealthy. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was walking around the time of the Churban. He was walking, he was riding on his donkey, and he sees a girl coming out, and she is unfortunately she's looking for food, and she can't find the greatest food, so instead she's looking for the barley from among the excrement of the animals belonging to the Arabs. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai sees her, and she says to him, Rabbi Parnasini, support me, I need Parnas, I have no food. And he says, Biti Miyat, who are you? And she says, I'm the daughter of Nachdima ben Gurion. And he says, what happened? Where is the money of your father? Where did it go? And she says, you know what they say in Yerushalayim? They say, Malach Mamun Chaser. Says that if you don't salt, which again, Rashi explains here to be that somebody who wants to keep his money has to literally salt it. Essentially what it means is you got to give away some of your money. You got to give tzedakah. Give away a little bit of money in order to make sure that you can keep the rest. So again, the Gemara has a whole discussion here about what happened afterwards. But that's how what she said at least was the source of her father's downfall, that he didn't give tzedakah. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second, right? Didn't he give tzedakah? The Gemara says that when he used to leave the Beis Medrash and go home, he used to have silk cloths that he used to put down underneath his feet that he walked on. And after he walked on them, the aniyim, the poor people, would come and take them away. That was his donation to them. So how can we say that he didn't give tzedakah? The answer is l'chvodo hu de'oba. He did it for his own honor. It was done, yes, he gave them these types of gifts, but it was done for his own kavod. So there's a very fascinating comment of Maharsha here. The Maharsha says the following afterwards, commenting on this Gemara. He says that v'rab b'dor hazeh, he says in his generation there were many people shemakav sin osher shalahem that gathered together all of their wealth shalo be'amuna, not in with honesty, not in honest means. Uvechilu Hashem, and with chilu Hashem, kigzeilas ovei kochavim, like stealing money from an non-Jew. Ve'achakach misnadim liyos amamud liyos b'am kavod, the chol shah. And then they take the same money they stole from the goy, and they donate it to their local shul. The Los Angeles Lab, they want to get a Mishaberach, especially Mishaberach. Today, of course, on Mishaberach, we say that we're donating to Matzal Beis HaKnesses. And their Mishaberach was not only that, it was saying how great the person was, that was what they were looking for. Ah, he got a Mishaberach. Wow, that's a wonderful thing. Leos Lab, Shema Tiferah, so that they should have a special name in the community and to be glorified. The Ein Zeh Ela Mitzvah Haba Ba'Avera, this is only a Mitzvah Haba Ba'Avera. The Ein Oshar Zab Melech Vekium. And this wealth has no salt, as the Gemara said, and no sustainment. It's not going to remain. As the Gemara says, that your wealth will not remain if you use your wealth if it's gathered in the improper means or if it's not given to tzedakah. Marsha says that the lesson from here is that not only do you have to give tzedakah, but also that you have to make sure that the money that you earn is earned in a totally honest manner. One other comment, and we'll conclude with this. This is the comments of the Ber HaGola, the commentary that cites the sources of the Shulchan Aruch. In Choshen Mishpat, so in Shin Mem Chesir. So the Ramah says here that the only time, again, it's a big discussion of whether you're allowed to keep money which from a non-Jew that was mistakenly given to you. So he says, of course, there's machlokas about exactly what the details are. But it seems that everybody agrees here that if the non-Jew himself made a mistake and gave you, let's say, the wrong amount of change at the store, he gave you back a 50 shekel bill instead of a 20 shekel bill, again, he wasn't Jewish, let's say, or whatever it is, he says the halacha is that you do not have to give the money back. That is the strict halacha. If the non-Jew makes a mistake and gives you too much money, you do not have to give the money back. However, the Ber HaGola here says a very fascinating thing. He says that the same way that we say in other aspects of halacha, that if you want to return something to the non-Jew and you don't have to, l'kadesh es Hashem, to l'kadesh es Shemayim, k'deish yifar v'as Yisrael, so that they should look at the Jewish people and say how great we are. V'yedu shem balei amunah, and people should say that the Jewish people are balei amunah, they're honest. Harei zeh meshubach, this is a wonderful thing. And he says here also, if a non-Jew gives you money by mistakenly too much more than you would deserve, says also that that is a praiseworthy thing. And he says, "Vani kos exos l'doros." He says, "I write this for generations, not just for the halacha of the Gemara, but for all generations." Sharisi ravim galu, that I saw many people that became great, that shiru, and they became rich. Mean tos sheitu ha'akum, that they became rich through money that the non-Jews gave them that they was a mistake. They weren't supposed to give it to them. They didn't realize they made a mistake. And what happened to their money? V'lo hitzlichu, they did not succeed. V'yardu nechaseihem l'tumayon, and they lost all of their money. They didn't leave any blessing after that. As the Sefer Hasidim writes, which I looked up, it doesn't say exactly this, but it's pretty much the same idea. Rav Masher Kitchu Hashem, there are many people that have been Makari Shem Shemayim, Bechzir Talyos Akum, and have returned money to a non-Jew, a B'davar Chashem, when we talk about a significant amount. Gadol Be'ashir Be'etzlichu, and they did very, very well after he became wealthy. And they were able to retain their wealth. I will mention a story with a famous philanthropist named Irving Bunin, who has wrote the commentary on Pirkei Avos, three volumes you may have seen. So apparently this happened with him as well. That's he actually had an incident where he was given a lot of money, mistakenly by, I don't know exactly who it was, either a non-Jewish institution or something, and he gave the whole thing back. And apparently it was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem at the time that he did that. So that's our responsibility here. The point of these halachos, and for the shiurim here, God willing, is to go through some of the halachos related to business and halacha and business ethics, and try to understand how we can be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, how we can come out and really show that the Torah is a Torah which preaches honesty and preaches Be'adam L'chaveiro, and not only the strict halacha, but also Lifnei Mishmor HaSadeh, we can go farther than the strict halacha, and really not only be the most makbid on our kashrus and the most makbid on our Shabbos, but also the most makbid on our Be'adam L'chaveiro. Neshavach, everyone, if there are any other questions or other... if you want to...
Just some housekeeping. The goal or the idea was that we would change houses every year, and hopefully the person who hosts it will get an extra schus to host this year. If you're interested in hosting this year, please speak to Ben after this year. And if you have any ideas for the shirim themselves or issues that you want to be raised, speak to Rabbi Ozrowski about that. And again, we scheduled this for 10 shirim. We kind of didn't fill up the 10 shirim, so we don't know where we're going after the fifth one. So if you have any ideas, if you think there are things that should be discussed, please speak to Rabbi Ozrowski.
So the last point. So for next week, the schedule right now is that we're going to be discussing the halachas of Gnevas Das, which is essentially the issues of misleading other people, presenting inaccurate information in whatever way it is. If you're selling a product, can you say things that are not true about it? Can you sort of mislead people about how necessary it is? Interviews, things like that. That's going to be the discussion. How far can you go or not go in terms of presenting things in an inaccurate or accurate way. Again, the format of the rest of the shiur is going to be obviously very different than this one. Essentially, what we're going to do is present one or two scenarios. We'll discuss some of the sources inside, and afterwards, hopefully, we'll be able to have a bit of a discussion about how some of the sources apply to many of the common cases that we face today. Anybody who has any scenarios that they would like to send that we'd like to discuss for next week about the name of Stas, not misrepresenting or misleading people, please email it to either me or to Yitzhak or Ben or Phil, and we'll put it on the list of the source sheet for next week, God willing.
We have those six or seven.